You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
So when we talk about equality, well, that's a good goal. But let us not presume that because everyone should be treated equal, that they start out on equal footing. So equity, as a concept, says, recognize that everyone has the same capacity, but in order for them to have equal opportunity to reach that capacity, well, we must pay attention to this issue of equity if we are to expect and allow people to compete on equal footing.
That is our Vice President, Kamala Harris. She actually said that a few weeks ago. She's in the news today for saying basically the same thing, but attributing it to Hurricane Ian, however you say that, in Florida, and you know, saying that she literally said, "Hey, we have to help the people who have less, and they have to be taken care of first and foremost. You know, equality, okay, but equity. Let's do this in the name of equity." Okay, well, I have a lot to say on this subject, actually, because for 18 years I worked with people who were not born on third base. Maybe weren't even in the ballpark, didn't even get up to bat, you know, where other people are born on third base, not too far to get home. I get that. I get the differences, but let's unpack it a little bit. The vice president just said they have the same capacity, but they don't have the same opportunity. Well, I disagree. I don't think that you have the same capacity. Everybody has a little bit of something different. Everybody has a little something different. I used to do this when I was working in the public school system. For 18 years, I worked with kids from, you know, a disadvantaged background, and was working to get them to participate in where the advantaged are, if that's what you want to call it. They don't all have the same capacity. Nobody has the same capacity, Madam Vice President. They just don't. They all are equal as human beings. They all have heartbeats. They all have blood. They all have, you know, hands and feet and toes and all that kind of stuff. They're human beings. So we all do have equality. And it says that in our Constitution. We're all equal. All men are created equal. And God did create us equal. But as my mom always said, God created his equal children unequally. He gave them different capacities. Have you ever seen that little cartoon where there are three boys and they're just watching a little baseball game, a little league baseball game? The fence is a boarded fence. You can't see through it. But there's three kids, and one of them is tall. And boy, he can see over it. He can see the everything that's going on. The middle one has to stand on his tippy toes, but he can get his nose and eyes over the top of the fence, and he can see. The little one has no shot. He can't see a darn thing. Now, if you ever go through equity training, which I have a bunch, you will learn that the guy who can see over should feel bad about his his capability. Even though it was God-given, he should realize, I am privileged. I can see over this fence. We're using the fence as an analogy for life. And I should look at the little guy over there, and much less the middle guy who also has to stand on his tippy toes, and I should realize, hey, I should take a step down or two. It's not my turn anymore. I should stop. Except for that's not what we used to teach at all. We used to teach that whether you were the little guy, I'm going to stay with the analogy, I used to say a salt shaker or a big gallon jug, if you are filled to your capacity for what you can do, then you have equity. So this little guy, well, he can't see over the fence. That's not the skill set he has. What he does have is a tremendous skill set with tools and things, and all he needs to do is come over with one of his tools and drill a little hole in the fence, and by golly, he'll see right through, and he can do it. He can handle it. But he did it of his own accord, and there's some human satisfaction in that. Not everything has to be a handout. Not everything has to be covered by some greater force to tell us what to do. So, Madam Vice President, I get what you're saying, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with the actuality of what you've said. All right, we'll be right back. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning, you're sneezing, it's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
My thoughts were short, my hair was long, caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Russia has decided that it will be under sanctions indefinitely because Putin will not stop waging war on Ukraine. The outcome of the situation in Ukraine is an existential issue for them because it's part of the strategic security perimeter on which Russia relied for centuries. And that is why Putin decided that NATO membership for Ukraine is a red line. But the revenue that the Russians have lost has already been replaced by the $55 billion joint Russia-China pipeline, the Power of Siberia, and additional export earnings from northwestern, non-Western countries, such as, you know, not just China, but India, Afghanistan, including the Taliban. The Russians are making
Yes, they are. That was Rebecca Koffler. She wrote Putin's Playbook. I love that woman. If you don't follow Rebecca Koffler, that's K-O-F-F-L-E-R, Rebecca Koffler, you should. She really, really has it down. She knows Putin better than Putin knows Putin, and I love listening to her. All right, this is the longest segment in the show, so stick with me. I'm going to try to make a point here. You know that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is down right now, and they're saying that the West did it, and Joe Biden, I remember I saw a clip. Oh, if we want to bring that down, we can bring that down. Trust me. So I think that was more about hey, man, you know, that type of thing. But Rebecca Koffler makes the case that Russia, she says she is 99% certain that Russia has sabotaged this pipeline. And here are some of her points. She says that first, Putin has the motivation. He has got to try to compel the U.S. and Europe to stop providing long-range weaponry to Ukraine. It is making him look bad, and he has the motivation to do something to, hey, look over here, another issue. And by the way, these same people that are supplying, they did it. Okay, fine. Number two, damaging or destroying critical infrastructure is consistent with Russia's warfighting concept called, you ready for this? It actually has a name, Strategic Operation to Defeat Critical Infrastructure of the Adversary. That sounds real Russian, doesn't it? Sapkov, or something like that in Russian. And so they have been spent decades conceptualizing ways to bypass the U.S. and NATO's conventional superiority in a conflict that they had concluded was inevitable. So they are desperate to put this into play. The next thing, the third reason why, and by the way, this Sapkov can be deployed during peacetime. It destabilizes their opponent's social and political situation. And it hopefully will stop by taking parts of the adversary's civilian infrastructure out of commission. The fourth reason that she thinks it's Russia is it's one of the very few countries that has the exact capability needed to sever the Nord Stream pipeline carrying the gas, and they can do it covertly. It's their infrastructure. They have put tons of money into top secret programs called deep sea research, which includes work on undersea communications and sensor networks, hydrocarbon exploitation, submarine rescue, and investigating wreckage. They have put a ton of money into expanding their seabed warfare, and the U.S. Naval Institute has said they are ahead of us in that. So they have the expertise. And last, fifth, he has no use for it anymore. She said this in her soundbite at the beginning. There's no revenue being produced. Where the revenue is coming now is from his buddy over in China. That's right, the $55 billion Russia-China pipeline, the power of Siberia. It is already producing oil, and he can bring it in. Meanwhile, he can keep everybody else ready for a cold winter because he shut down the pipeline that helps supply all of Europe, another problem for the U.S. to have to deal with. And this pipeline that we're talking about that he does get revenue from will come online in 2025 fully, but he is already receiving benefit from it. Now, why would Russia destroying its own pipeline present an existential threat to the U.S.? That's what I want to know. That is why some of my stack of stuff here, like Rush Limbaugh. I'm nowhere near Rush Limbaugh. Anyway, Putin and Xi Jinping met recently in Uzbekistan at a summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is an Asian version of NATO. The two of them have gotten together, and they have also participated in Vostok, V-O-S-T-O-K, Vostok 2022, in which Russia and China practiced aviation and naval drills in the Sea of Japan. So they are already getting together. So let's look at five reasons from Rebecca Kofler as to why this is very bad for the United States. Both regimes, China and Russia, have masterminded long-range strategies to destabilize American society through espionage, covert influence operations, subversion, election interference. They do all of it. They steal U.S. secrets, cultivate access to influential persons, infiltrate businesses, political institutions, educational institutions. They are behind a lot of the activist group with the goal of fomenting discord and transforming America into an undemocratic authoritarian state. I put a big old star when I read that. Fomenting discord and transforming America into an undemocratic authoritarian state. Number two, Russia and China develop doctrines that seek to defeat America on the battlefield. They're both trying, Moscow and Beijing are trying to synchronize the timing of any combat operations and try to get America into a two-theater war scenario. I'll go get Taiwan, you go get Ukraine. Let's do it. Let's watch America dance then. And then again, they continue to practice joint combat drills for that purpose. All right, that's two reasons that America ought to be shaking in its boots a little bit. Let's see. Where's number three? I must have stapled number three, so I can't find it. Here it is. Both adversaries have identified America's reliance on technology as critical. And boy, is our reliance on technology critical. Just every day I wake up and I have to get somebody to help me with something technological. So both have developed cyber attack and space warfare doctrines. And that's interesting. No wonder under the previous, under 45, he created Space Force. I always wondered about that. Cyber attack and space warfare doctrines and weapons to degrade and destroy U.S. military and civilian networks, critical U.S. infrastructure, from banking to transportation to hospitals to our nuclear plants, are all vulnerable to attack. It's fascinating. Number four, the Russia-China accelerating economic cooperation is boosted by their forecasts that the center of gravity in international commerce and investment is moving to Asia. Yes, indeed, folks, forget the dollar. The two nations have already set up a method to make bilateral transactions in rubles or yen instead of euros and dollars, which means they are bypassing the Western system called SWIFT. Plans are underway to integrate China's Belt and Road Initiative with China's Eurasian Economic Union. This trend plays into China's long-range goal of replacing the dollar with the Chinese yen. Other authoritarian regimes which seek to decouple business from human rights will likely favor an international transactions alternative. Of course they would. This massive $55 billion pipeline, the Power of Siberia, as it's called, already sends Russian gas to parts of China and will become fully operational, as I said earlier, in 2025. All right, there is a hang on. Don't anybody go anywhere. Number five, to be clear. Oh, this is interesting. To be clear, Russia and China are not natural enemies. They actually share a tumultuous history full of border disputes, cultural prejudices, suspicions. However, they are united by a common cause. Guess who the cause is? Having aligned their aggressive policies to diminish America's role in the world and promote an authoritarian system of governance. You know what's funny is I watched a Netflix or something where America actually was run by the Soviets in the East and was it the West? I can't remember. And the Chinese in the West. And there was kind of a center zone that everybody was always trying to get to. I don't know if anybody saw that, but it was, I thought it was just fiction. Not sure. Let's see. Both men have clearly laid out their anti-U.S. strategic ambitions. Putin seeks to rebuild the USSR-like alliance in Eurasia, and Xi is implementing the centuries-old China dream concept of economic prosperity and military strength. In line with it, Xi is taking China along the road to rejuvenation. That's amazing. Road to rejuvenation. China dream. In turn, to become a global dominant power. You know what's interesting is what's going to happen. All right, so let's just assume they're successful and they bring the U.S. down. Let's just assume that happens. Then what? Is it that show that I was watching on Netflix or whatever it was? What do you do then? Because you can't have two bulls in the field. I know that because I was a farm boy. One bull, that's it. Otherwise, the two kill each other. So is this utopia? Maybe it's a stage to utopia, but it isn't utopia. That reminds me, think about this doctrine of communism, which both of them have. They each have the same doctrine, but the problem is they each want to control the whole globe. So what's going to ultimately happen? But remember George's Hagel. Remember, have you ever had a soda with him? I have. George's Hagel. I think he lived in the 1800s, maybe 1700s. Anyway, he was the undercurrent to Marx. And what Hegel said was there has to be a thesis. You take a thesis, any thesis. Oh, call the thesis America, American exceptionalism. That's our thesis. What you've got to do is you've got to create an antithesis, an antithesis, and start banging away with your antithesis into the thesis, right? And then after a time, a new synthesis will occur. And that synthesis is better than the old. And then in 75 years, that will become a thesis, and you have to develop a new antithesis, and it just keeps going until you reach utopia. Makes sense. Well, China is waiting until 2049 when it believes it will supplant the U.S. by 2049. Don't ask me where she got that from. Now, look at this. Xi is 69 years old, and Putin is as well, and he's turning 70 this month. Each likely sees an opportunity to assert his own and his country's power today. Interesting. Interesting, interesting. Doing so because the perception that Washington is unprepared to handle two wars simultaneously. Do you think we can handle two wars? I don't know. I really don't know. I guess you could say we're already kind of handling one because we're sending so much stuff to Ukraine. But I think that's Rebecca's main purpose, is that is messing with Putin. He needs Ukraine. He wants it. And we are stopping that. So he is going to do whatever he can. And so he dismantled the pipeline. It doesn't hurt him. It really doesn't hurt him. Now they're blaming the West, but is that really true? I don't know. This is one smart woman, I think. So I think we ought to listen to her. All right. We'll be back. We've got a good hour, and back in a moment.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Mr. President, as you know, last Tuesday, the annual inflation rate came in at 8.3%. The stock market nosedived. People are shocked by their grocery bills. What can you do better and faster?
Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month was just an inch. Hardly at all.
You're not arguing that 8.3 is good news.
No, I'm not saying it's good news, but it was 8.2 or 8.2 before. I mean, it's not. I can make it sound like all of a sudden, my God, it went to 8.2%.
It's the highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that, but guess what? We are. We're in a position where, for the last several months, it hasn't spiked. It has just barely. It's been basically even.
So, if somebody asked you, hey, what could you do? So we've got a problem. You know, pick any problem. I don't know. We got a problem. What can we do to make it better? What can you do? I mean, you're the leader here. What can you do to make it better? And you come back and you say, oh, well, it's static. The product, it's static. It's not moving an inch. It's just moved an inch. That's all. That is unbelievable how intellectually dishonest. To try to answer the question that way. Think of anything. It doesn't matter. Anything in your own life. If somebody answered and dodged a question like that, when people are really in pain, 8.3%. That, you know, inflation, according to Forbes, I went ahead and looked it up, is the tendency for prices of goods and services to rise over time. It is typically expressed as a percentage that indicates a year-over-year rate of growth. The inflation rate gives you a quick and ready measure of the changing purchasing power of consumers and businesses. Okay, so that's it. Prices and goods going up. Pretty simple. Well, it's only moved an inch. says President Biden. Only an inch. Well, Representative Rick Allen from Georgia on the House floor, he just said this recently. That inch to families represents $8,000. $8,000 for a typical middle-class family. Income at about $4,000 a month. That's 2 months. 2 months you just gave away. Give away 2 months of your income. That's what inflation is doing and hurting people. Now, just a little bit, just I'm trying to be intelligent here. The Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates the Consumer Price Index by collecting data from 24,000 consumers. I never knew how they did this, but 24,000 consumers all over the U.S., and they track the most commonly purchased goods and services, food, energy, computers, prescriptions, college tuition, mortgage payments, etc., to see how they change over time. But because food and energy, this is important, because food and energy can vary greatly depending on a variety of factors, the Bureau of Labor Statistics also shares the core CPI that leaves those two out. Okay, so that's good. That gives you makes it more fair. Then there's the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the BEA. They calculate another index called the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index. I won't even act like I know exactly what that is, but what they do is they use a fixed basket instead of tracking what consumers are paying, they track what businesses are selling. Think about that. What are businesses selling those products and services for? And that way they're looking at the equation from the buying side and the push, the selling side. That's how we come up with these inflation numbers. And the core PCE is the most important data the Federal Reserve considers as they strive to keep inflation around 2%. What do you think inflation was when 45, Mr. Trump left office? It was at 1.4% in January of 2021. Today, we know it is at 8.3%. Now, okay, President Biden, thank you. It is leveled out. Perfect. I asked my brother Joe, who is the father of five children, how this has affected him. And here were some of the things. Joe, hi, if you're watching on Rumble.
Mr. President, as you know.
Joe said, back in 2020, wait a minute. This segment can't be over yet. I haven't gotten into Joe and what his costs were. Look at this. He bought white bread for 98 cents. Now it's $1.48. He bought eggs at 86 cents. Now they're $2.82. Sugar, $1.74. Now it's $2.84. 20 to 40%. His costs have increased. Okay, Joe, thank you for that. We'll talk to you soon.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota for all customers and employees. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Anyway, so as I was saying in the last segment, Joe is hurting with his five kids, and it has cost him about 20% to 40% just on groceries. So thank you, Joe, for that information. Appreciate it. Now we're going to, there's one thing that's hurting families, in runaway inflation, and the president is more worried about it. Just moved an inch. Come on, man, get off my back. It just moved an inch, that's crazy. That's crazy, Mr. President. But here's another thing that's hurting kids. And this thing, this is appalling. It really is. Wait till you hear this. My guest now, and I'm lucky to have him here, is a man named Jay Richards. Remember that name, Jay Richards. He's the director of the Heritage Foundation DeVos Center for Life, Family, and Religion. Jay, how are you, sir?
Just fine. Great to be with you.
Good. It's too bad you can't be with Larry Connors. You have to just be with Frank Van Brie. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's just fine.
Good. Well, I am. I'm fascinated, and I'm. I don't know. I'm quite honestly disgusted by this, and I'm scared. Mm-hmm. I'm scared. So let me just set this up. You sent a letter from your nonprofit, I guess, or your coalition called, mm-hmm. Promise to America's Parents Coalition to Governor Gavin Newsom, urging him to stand up for the safety and protection of children by vetoing Senate Bill 107. Why don't we just start there? What is Senate Bill 107, and did he listen to you?
Okay, answer the second question first. No, he did not answer. So basically it's the Senate bill that went to his desk. And if he had not signed it, if he just say declined to veto it or do anything, it would have gone into law on Friday. He actually signed it. So in other words, he's put his own signature on this. Now, what is SB 107? Well, SB 107 empowers the courts of California to take custody of children who enter their state from other states for purposes of gender transition procedure. So in other words, if you have a child from Arkansas and she decides she's a boy, she's 16 years old, she flees to California, abandons her family because she wants to do this so badly. She can go to a gender clinic, and a court in California can sort of basically take temporary custody away from her parents in Arkansas so that she can undergo this treatment. In this case, it would be cross-sex hormones, but if she's a little older, it could actually be double mastectomy or various gender transition procedures. So it's as bad as you can possibly imagine. Whatever the state laws are in your own state, if a child gets to California, they can end up getting these treatments without the consent of the parents at all.
Who the heck comes up with a bill like that? I mean, that is frickin' evil. I'm sorry. Who comes up? Somebody with no kids? I just blows my mind.
It does. I mean, this, unfortunately, I'm doing this full time. I'm tracking the gender ideology full time because I honestly think it strikes at the root of civilization, at human nature, and certainly at the bond between parents and kids. And it's radical gender ideologues who, if you think people aren't people, right? We're not these embodied creatures that are male and female. We're these kind of disembodied thoughts, and our bodies don't mean anything. So if a girl gets the thought that she's a boy or non-binary or whatever, then her body, a proper treatment ought to involve transforming her body to conform to this internal idea, as opposed to if a child is delusional or doesn't actually understand who she is, you help a child get comfortable with their body. You don't reinforce this idea that they're born in the wrong body. And so we're dealing with this gender ideology that's a kind of fundamentally different view of who the human person is compared to what most people think. And frankly, I think it's people left, right, and center mostly would agree that this is bad, but it's so bad that honestly, people have a hard time believing that a policy like this could exist.
No question. The body, that's interesting. Bodies don't mean anything except when you get injured. You're an athlete and mm-hmm. you get injured and your career ends. That meant something because your body is connected to your mind.
Right.
And your soul.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. And I don't know, I'm Catholic, and so I remember John mm-hmm. Paul II when he did his whole treatise on the theology of the body. The body is what it is. It is what makes us human. Our soul is part of it. And in the next world, if you believe all this stuff, your body and your soul will be united. They will be one.
So that's the theology of the body. And frankly, I mean, though I'm used to sort of framing this stuff in secular terms, if you really want to get down to it, you need a view of the human person that combines both our spiritual and our physical nature. Gender ideology denies the meaning of the body so that, whereas normally you'd think if you figure out what someone is, that they're human, that they're male or female, in part by looking at their body, and you do this for yourself. Rather, the body's just sort of this shell, and so, you know, it could be discarded, it could be transformed. It's the most destructive thing I think you could possibly teach a child, especially a child that's disturbed, maybe going through puberty, is already uncomfortable with their body. And then to tell her that, oh, you know, actually, you could be this kind of gendered soul and born in the wrong body, and so we should fix that with scalpel and with drugs. That's what we're dealing with here.
Is this, again, part of the whole, it seems like everything I've been talking about on this show, I don't do this show very often, so I have to get in and start studying things at a little bit deeper depth. And I'll tell you what, it's all depressing. Everything is all about secularism. It's about humanism. It's about lack of God and us making this this reach for utopia. We're always going for utopia. Earlier, before you got on, I was talking about George's Hegel. How's that, huh? With the thesis, antithesis, synthesis model. What in the world? So, Jay, what in the heck are we? Where does all this end? What are we going for? Are we going for some kind of utopia? If you had to make a good argument for the people who actually think this is good, step on that side for just a second. Go ahead and be the antithesis to your own thesis for just a second. Let's try to find out what good they might be trying to cook up here.
Well, philosophically, we call it expressive individualism. And so if what we are is we're sort of ultimately we express ourselves or become who we're supposed to be by sort of expressing whatever is inside us on the outside, then that's the best thing you can do. And so if there's a girl, but on the inside, she has this idea that she should best express herself as a boy, then the best thing that could happen is for doctors to help her body conform to this internal idea. Now, of course, it completely destroys the idea that you could have a delusional belief, that you could actually be genuinely mistaken, because that doesn't really make sense if all we are is this kind of internal subjective idea. That's actually what we're dealing with. Most people think this is so deranged that, like I said, they don't really think this is happening. They notice it when all of a sudden boys start competing against girls or we put men in women's prisons. You realize something kind of weird's happening. But this is essentially gender ideology gone to seed. Already in California, Californians could have their children taken away from them. The state could take custody away from
kids out of here.
Didn't want to do this. Absolutely. And this has been happening for a while, in fact, in which Child Protective Services could take kids away from parents who didn't want to go through with this gender transition stuff, which California defines as the proper way of treating this problem. And what's changed now is that California will actually take other kids. And so it's essentially creating a magnet so the kids that are wanting to do this can run away from their families or maybe parents, right? They could be in a custody battle with one parent wanting to do this and the other one not. The one parent that wanted to do it, as long as he gets his daughter to California and gets their feet in California, the courts in California can take custody of that child and actually allow the child to undergo this procedure, even without the parents' wishes in another part of the country.
I'm flabbergasted. My blood boils at this. Unbelievable how this could destroy. I don't even know where to. Well, here, I know where we'll go. We've only got about a minute or so, minute and a half left. But so I've been dying to ask you, Jay, since you're on with us. Hey, Jay, what is a woman?
A woman is an adult human female. A woman is someone whose body is organized for the production of large, relatively immobile gametes called eggs, and that under the course of normal development will be able to give birth and to be able to menstruate at some point during her life cycle. So everybody knows this, even though we didn't know biology, we could tell the difference. The fact that this is a partisan question that some members, politicians aren't actually willing to answer, I think tells you how far gone we are. That's the bad news. The good news is that it's so deranged and so crazy that I think there's going to be a massive backlash against this, but
sure,
it's probably not going to happen. You know, until the Dems get really stomped in an election, I don't think they'll
hear you. Well, Jay, thank you. Jay Richards. Everybody remember that name. Thank you so much for being on, and I'm sorry this clock moves so darn fast.
My pleasure.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, we're at the end of the hour. Got just a few minutes left here. I did the best I could, and I hope maybe some of this was informative to you. But you know what I want to ask? That Jay, what a great guy. What a great guy and intelligent, too. But I want to ask, are you back, Molech? Molech, are you back? You know who Molech is? He's from the Old Testament. King Solomon actually fell away from God because he built a high place, an altar, a sanctuary for many foreign gods. But one of them was to Molech. And you know what Molech's big deal was? He was the god associated with the sacrifice of human beings, especially children, by their parents. Molech. Are you back, buddy? Isn't that fascinating? And they would do that. Back in those days, they would do that. He was depicted as a human body, but his statue was usually made of bronze. His arms were outstretched and a belly that opened to serve as a furnace. And they would give their child to this molten thing, which was on fire, and they would sacrifice. The family would watch the child burn alive so that they could secure favors from Molech, a better life, or whatever kind of favors. So you give your child for that. And I know this is, well, I don't know. That's maddening. Just like if all of a sudden suddenly all of your rights are stripped. You're living here in Missouri, let's say, and your spouse takes your son or daughter to California, and now you have no rights. Or your son or daughter sneaks out and gets to California. Now, all of a sudden, California is a destination for kids like this. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. My mother, God rest her soul, is turning in her grave as this sort of stuff happens. There's another mom that I wanted to bring up. You know, the world is kind of a crazy place, and we've been talking about it. And I told you I am Catholic, but that's all right. So be it. But this happened in the secular press back in 1917. Go back and look it up. Fatima, Portugal. Hollywood just did a movie on it a couple of years ago. Although it was kind of wimpy, it didn't really get into the meat of what Mary was appearing to those three shepherd children about. But Mary revealed momentous secrets to the world in 1917. Remember, 70,000 people watched the sun whirl. They thought they were going to be smushed by the sun. Go read it in the papers. It's called The Whirling of the Sun. And the Mother of God made it happen because they all wanted some proof. These kids had been seeing this woman and coming back and saying outlandish things, things that were well beyond their capacity. They were 10, 8, and 6 years old, I believe. And so here, this woman, they kept saying, is appearing. So 70,000 people went up on the day that she appeared, and she said what day she'd appear. And this is in the papers. So I'm going to just say this. The Virgin Mary revealed momentous secrets to the world in 1917, secrets that centered around Russia. One of her disclosures was that after years of godless rule, Russia would be converted and returned to her Christian roots. On July 13th, 1917, Mary, the Mother of God, told seer Lucia, she was the oldest of the kids, Lucia Santos, she lived all the way into this century, when you see a night illuminated by, wait a minute, I lost my place, when you see a night illuminated by an unknown light, know that this is a great sign, that he, God, my son, is going to punish the world for its crimes by means of war. To prevent this, I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart. I bring it up because it was in the secular press of the day, and who is putting her errors throughout the world right now? Russia. Interesting. She said, if people will listen to my requests, and she told the kids what her requests were, then Russia will be converted and there will be peace. If not, she will spread her errors through the world, causing wars and persecution of the church. The good will be martyred. The Holy Father will have much to suffer. Various nations will be annihilated. And Sister Lucia, she was a Carmelite nun, after this, she wasn't when Mary appeared to her, she's just a shepherd girl, but she added emphasis, various nations will be annihilated. In another place, Mary, God's mom, Jesus's mom, said, the good and the bad will be taken together, but after this occurs, the living will envy the dead. Those are scary words and that sort of thing, but you know what? We just had a scary story about what California is doing. So fine. So I'm bringing this bad boy out. All right? The Mother of God. Be careful, people. Be careful, Mr. Newsom. Why don't you go back and nix that SB 107? What a bunch of nonsense, and how terrible this is for our nation and our world. Again, if my mom were living, I'm the oldest of 10 kids, and mom spent a lot of time and effort helping us learn what God wants. And to have this kind of nonsense, just take it all away like that, it's unbelievable. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. You're going to get Larry back. I appreciate the time that I had with you today. I hope your lives are strong. Let's keep each other in mind. Let's say some prayers for each other, and let's make America strong. Take care, everyone. Have a good day.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.